compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on a busy Taco Tuesday. We've got lots of phone calls today. A few things I want to get out of the way before we proceed. Texas is allowing people to get organ donations without the COVID-19 shot. This reported by the Christian Post. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's office has announced that the state will not require people in need of life-saving organ transplants to get the COVID-19 vaccine in order to receive treatment. In a statement from the governor's office, he said, "Vaccines remain voluntary and never forced. Anyone being denied critical life-saving organ transplants is welcome here in Texas, where one's rights and freedoms are always protected." Wesley J. Smith of the conservative publication The National Review commended Texas for its decision while denouncing denials of organ transplants on the basis of vaccination status. Smith said, "So which state really cares about the well-being of these very ill patients? Clearly Texas. But don't expect the usual media suspects and critics to give the state the credit. That would interfere with the false narrative that rejecting mandates is a sin, or excuse me, is akin to killing people, even though Colorado's transplant refusals more aptly fit that description." He was alluding to the highly publicized decision by the UC Health System to prohibit organ transplants for patients who refuse to be vaccinated against COVID-19. A UC Health spokesperson said, "In almost all situations, transplant recipients and living donors in their system are now required to be vaccinated against COVID-19 in addition to meeting other health requirements. Well, that's not happening in Texas by order of the governor. And I thought you'd like to know about that. Since we've talked a lot about the idea of the supply chain problems and stuff that you can't get and just scarcity in weird ways, there's a fascinating article here about some of the tactics that retailers are turning to now to cover up empty shelves as the supply chain worsens. Retailers in the U.S. are resorting to bizarre methods to conceal increasingly bare shelves that are being brought on by the supply chain crisis. Shoppers have flooded social media with images of bare shelves at supermarkets and department stores in recent weeks. As the situation worsens, stores have attempted to literally cover up their shelves. One video posted to social media shows numerous rows of colorful folding lawn chairs set up along empty shelves in a department store. "We are at the edge of the precipice," one user who shared the video wrote. "The pretending it's fine aspect of the charade evokes a deep terror." Another person said, "Those are chairs for us to sit in and enjoy the breadlines." Another wrote, "Watch this kind of stuff happen in Venezuela. Warned people about it. They started taking the same choices Venezuela once made, and we know where that got Venezuela. The U.S. seems no different." Ash Short from the Daily Wire posted an image of her local Safeway store showing products spread single file. "Our Safeway," she said, "appears to be trying to hide the supply shortage by using single lines of products to fill shelves." Some stores have gigantic, how would you describe these, like long pictures that are pictures of food on shelves, and that's all it is. And they put it over the shelf from one end of the row to another. So all it really is just a picture of food on the shelf when there's in fact no food on the shelf. Cyrus, you've heard me say before, yeah, I think people should put a little extra when you go to the grocery store, get a little extra.
Have you experienced this in your own home, like ordering anything from Amazon or going to the grocery store? Has there been anything that you can usually easily get that you haven't been able to get yet?
Yes. So in the case of the grocery store, not as much, at least. I have noticed some empty shelves or shelves that are much thinner in terms of the stock that they have. But I haven't not been able to get something. But where I've noticed it is on Amazon. So when I go to order stuff on Amazon that I've been ordering, you know, things that you would get every month or so.
That's same.
Yeah. And it's just like, sorry, we don't have that anymore. Yeah. What?
We have the stuff that comes every month, you know, like garbage bags and... Right. I'm drawing a blank, of course. But it's multiple items. Vitamins are a big one.
Yeah.
And they're just not stocked. So we still have been charged for the item. And then there's this weird thing where it says it's been delivered, but it also hasn't been shipped. So there's, it doesn't make any sense. It's something's going on.
Oh, in a big way. And I think this is one reason why I like to talk about this, not because I like it. I don't like it, but I want people to know about this. We've talked about everything from Taco Bell running out of flour tortillas.
Shopping bags.
Yeah.
Paper sacks.
Yeah, and that's chlorine. Not that big of a deal, but what about when you can't get wine? That's a serious problem.
Oh, yeah.
There is a Bible verse that says there is an outcry in the streets for lack of wine. I like that Bible verse. But so it's happening. Oh, you know what? I remember. You know where I have seen it? In our local Kroger, because Kroger is huge in the Midwest, and we have a Kroger Supercenter. You know where I have noticed it? In the meat section.
Oh.
It used to be that the meat section was stocked top to bottom, left to right, and it is now, there's like patchy sections where there is no product, just shelves. And there used to be a great variety of different kinds of, you know, if you want pork chops, bone-in pork chop, this kind of pork chop. Now it's, there's no variety. And I've been noticing that for a while, actually. So I really do believe it's wise to put a little extra aside. And that's not hoarding. That's preparing and having a little bit more on hand in case there comes a day when you can't get something like toilet paper.
And it gives you an opportunity to share with your neighbors.
Especially that. I was going to say that next, but you dodged it. And how about this one? This is related to this. Now, this is from CNBC. Restaurants are going out of their minds right now trying to find people to work. Not just restaurants, but everything. People are not willing to work. I don't understand this phenomenon. So, well, you've heard me say it before. They're turning to robots now. At Inspire Brands Innovation Center in Atlanta, Flippy the Robot is taking on a new challenge. An automated worker made by Miso Robotics first came onto the scene as a burger solution. Now Flippy is frying wings for the first time. This restaurant has two of them, Flippy 1 and Flippy 2. And they've been in development for 5 years, taking on brands such as Cali Burger, White Castle. Now Buffalo Wild Wings is in on the action now. The SVP of Restaurant Operations says our strategy and our vision for automation is really not about the labor shortage. It's all about how we increase our capacity. The automation that we're looking at will allow us to unlock that and provide faster food to our guests. So as this article goes on, it talks about just the dramatic limitations now that these restaurants and other organizations face when trying to get people to work for them. They can't get people to work for them. I don't know why. A lot of the subsidies from the government were suspended recently, so the extra stimulus money wasn't coming in, and people are still not willing to work. And I see it everywhere. You probably see it too, Cyrus. You go into a business establishment, and they're frantic because they can't get people to work. Yep. I don't understand it.
I've seen it everywhere, and it's so now customer service is going down the tubes because there's too many people wanting an item or, you know, ordering breakfast, and there's not enough line cooks or servers to match the need. But on the other side of that, are they really hiring? This is a really weird time.
You probably see them too, but I see all around town help wanted signs everywhere.
Yet, you know, my kid, I mean, he's young. He has a worker's permit though, but no one responded to him when he was applying for jobs.
Well, if he lived in San Francisco, he could be a crime stopper because as the Wall Street Journal is pointing out, San Francisco has become a shoplifter's paradise. So he could be like a mall cop or something.
California just gets worse and worse.
Yeah. Check this out. Walgreens has had to close 5 more stores in San Francisco because of rampant shoplifting. And the reason is because they won't prosecute it. The new law that is in place, this California ballot initiative that passed in 2014. So anything that's stolen that's under $950 is treated as a nonviolent misdemeanor and is rarely, if ever, prosecuted.
What?
Yeah.
That's real?
That's real. It passed in 2014. I mean, this is how crazy it's gotten.
Oh, my gosh. I saw this in a movie, and I dismissed it as just dumb TV talk. But this guy, he's with his buddies, and he goes into a shoe shop or a shoe store, like a Nike store, and he grabs what he wants. And he grabs like all these boxes of Nikes, and then he just walks out. Yep. And the guy's like, "Hey, stop!" And he's like, "No, I don't think I will." And there's and then he's saying to his buddy that's with him, he's like, "What? Whoa! What are you doing? You can't just steal." And he's like, "Yeah, I can. I can steal up to $1,000 and not get in trouble."
That's the law in California now, and they voted for that in California. It was on the ballot, and enough Californians were that fill in the blank that they voted for this. So, and that's per visit. So if you go visit your local shoe store, you can snatch up to $950 without anything happening to you. Then you go back the next day, it's another $950.
Wow. This will backfire. This will be overturned next voting site. There will be so much theft.
But they and there is.
They'll have
Walgreens. Yeah, there is Walgreens closing. CVS has had to close stores. Yeah. Because they can't stay open because people are lifting all their stuff.
It's like the law is protecting the criminals at this point.
You know, it's almost as if that's what's going on, isn't it? Target, the same thing. This article has got a list of all these major retailers who are basically just closing stores, and that's not good for neighborhoods. You know, if the neighborhood is looting the stores and the store closes, then you don't have that store there anymore. So, I mean, it's just shooting themselves in the foot. In the feet. Yeah. So I just wanted you to be aware of it. Oh, one last question, Cyrus, before we go to the phones. This is a serious question for you. Have you ever spent $57,789 on a Pokemon card?
Nope.
Not even once?
Nope. It hasn't even crossed my mind.
Not even once?
Not even once.
Okay.
How much?
$57,789.
On a Pokemon card?
Yes.
Where do people get the kind of money to spend that on a Pokemon card?
Listen to this. One man was charged with spending his loan money. He got a Justice Department loan. I'm sorry, not a Justice Department loan. He got a government loan, you know, because of COVID. So it was a business loan. So he filed the necessary paperwork. He gets the loan. And he used the money on a variety of bad things. They caught him. Another guy used the business loan that he got from the federal government because of COVID, and he got a $318,000 loan. He used it to buy a Lamborghini. You've never bought a Lamborghini, have you?
What short sight? What are they thinking?
They apparently weren't.
Yeah.
Vinath Udomizne, I think is how you say it. He may be the only person accused of using his small business loan on a single Pokemon card. Prosecutors say the card cost him $57,089, which was more than two-thirds of the federal aid that he received. It was based on false information. So wire fraud charges were brought against him as part of this federal crackdown on the alleged misuse of massive relief programs that threw lifelines to businesses during the pandemic. A federal watchdog said this month that the Small Business Administration overpaid $4.5 billion in grants to self-employed people and that no system of controls was in place to flag applications with flawed or illogical information. Illogical information.
Wow.
I'd love to see what some of that illogical information. I think it's pretty illogical to spend $60,000 on a single game card.
I wonder if they play Pokemon in jail.
Well, he's got at least one card. Of course, he probably is going to have to give that back. He can mail it in to the federal government and say, in lieu of the $60,000. Let's go to some phone calls. Let's go to Gabriella in Parsippany, New Jersey. Hi, Gabriella.
Hello, Patrick. You had asked why people don't want to work.
Yeah,
and what came to mind, I've been retired. I can work easily, but I had COVID. Okay. I have immunity. I don't want to go with so many mandates. I cannot have a mask on my face for 8 hours. I can't. These mandates are just too much. I'd rather just cut expenses at home and not have that extra money. Because I think we just have lost all faith in this government they've taken away so many of our freedoms. I kind of do want to work, but there's just mm-hmm. too many gag orders.
Are there any jobs that you could do that don't require you to wear a mask?
They all have mandates. My sister volunteered at her Catholic school where her son goes, and now they told her, you have to be vaccinated, otherwise you can't even volunteer. And this is a Catholic school where yeah. she's paying $800 a month, and she wants to volunteer, and they're asking for volunteers. But they said, if you are not vaccinated, but she already had COVID, and we went to the priest to get a religious exemption or a medical exemption, and he says it's a mandate. And we're like, well, whose mandate? Are we the church, or who are we? It just, we're in a bad spot.
I was talking to a gentleman, Gabriella, in, where was I? I was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa this past weekend. Shout out to all the people that I met when I was out there. I was talking to one gentleman. He was the fellow who picked me up at the airport. His daughter, who I gather is in her early 20s, she's a few months away from graduating from her nursing school program. I believe she's going to graduate with her RN. And they've told all the students that they have to be vaccinated. And so this now puts her entire 4 years of work in jeopardy. She doesn't want to be vaccinated. I believe she has had COVID as well, if I remember correctly. So she has natural immunity. And in essence, as I understood what he was saying, if she wants to graduate, she has to be vaccinated. And she doesn't want to be vaccinated. Yeah. So yeah. I can easily imagine the situation you're in. Well, thank you, Gabriella. The mandate, it's interesting. You know, there actually isn't a mandate. There's verbiage that has come from press conferences with President Biden and Jen Psaki, his press secretary. But there is, as I understand it, having done a bit of research, there is no actual executive order. I mean, it's verbal only. And one of the things that I realized is that in reading some of these articles is that if there were an actual mandate, it would be in the courts right now. There'd be millions of people suing to try to stop this mandate. So it never actually was issued.
You do not know what you are talking about.
Well, on this one, I do. Oh, by the way, Dr. Fauci, I'm coming for you too. I've got something about you I'm coming to in just a few minutes. So stand by, Dr. Fauci. So she may not be able to graduate. Or, you know, she'll have to get vaccinated against her conscience if she doesn't want to do this. So in the meantime, thank you for the call, Gabriella. In the meantime, as China is perfecting hypersonic nuclear missiles, and Russia and China are having war games and planning and preparing for a confrontation militarily with the United States, guess what we're doing? President Biden has released the first ever national gender strategy. And Kamala Harris, our vice president, says this is our vision for the future of our nation. So while China is getting nukes ready and preparing to invade Taiwan and all the other crazy things that are going on, we're spending all of our time, apparently, on our gender strategy.
Gender strategy?
Yeah. Let me share with you some of this. You know what? Let's take a break. And then when we return, I will share with you straight from the vice president herself what our priorities are. While China and Russia and Iran are plotting and planning and developing and positioning, I'll tell you what we're going to do, because it's a priority above all other priorities. When we come back, I'll share that with you right after this. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right. Well, as China and Russia and Iran and whoever the other bad guys are are perfecting their military prowess and launching all kinds of opportunities, all kinds of things to mess with us. What are we doing? Well, Vice President Kamala Harris, she says, President Biden and I released the first ever national gender strategy. This is our vision for the future of our nation. And I'll tell you right up front, it's not my vision for the future of our nation, but it's their vision. Vice President Harris and President Biden believe that advancing gender equity and equality is fundamental to every individual's economic security, safety, health, and ability to exercise their most basic rights. It is also, and I'm reading to you, by the way, a document from the White House. So you can find it at whitehouse.gov if you're interested. It's in the briefing room section. Ensuring that all people, regardless of gender, have the opportunity to realize their full potential is therefore both a moral and strategic imperative.
Yes, that's true.
It's not true. It's not true. And I'm uncomfortable when people like this are lecturing us on what's moral. So I'm going to skip over all the gobbledygook, because that's all it is, and get down to the nitty-gritty. The strategy identifies 10 interconnected priorities: economic security, gender-based violence, health, education, justice and immigration, human rights and equality under the law, security and humanitarian relief, climate change, science and technology, and democracy participation and leadership. These priorities are inherently linked and must be tackled in concert. The strategy also adopts an intersectional approach that considers the barriers and challenges faced by those who experience intersecting and compounding forms of discrimination and bias related to gender, race, and other factors, including sexual orientation, ethnicity, religion, disability, age, and socioeconomic status. This includes addressing discrimination and bias faced by Black, Latino, and Indigenous and Native American people, Asian Americans, Native Americans, and Pacific Islanders, and other people of color. Now, they give a series of priorities, and I'll go through them. Improving economic security. As we recover from the pandemic, we have the opportunity to build an economy that works for women and their families. Wait a minute. Wait, back up. An economy that works for women. They don't define that word here. I'm looking. Let me see. No, there's no footnote. There's no. Let me see if there's like a. No, there's no chart. There's no interpretive key here for this word women. So building an economy that works for women. Well, how do they know? And how dare they assume somebody's gender?
You do not know what you are talking about.
This is the government, Dr. Fauci. By the way, I'm coming back to you in a little bit. So hold your water.
Ooh, I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
No, you really don't. So first of all, I object to the fact that they're assuming somebody's gender. They're calling them women. But what does that even mean anymore, Cyrus? What does that word woman mean? Because isn't...
I know what it means.
Bruce Jenner, I mean, Caitlyn Jenner, isn't... It's so confusing.
Yeah, I mean, Time Magazine called him Woman of the Year.
What about our new four-star admiral?
It's the most decorated woman in the history of ever.
Oh, by the way, a Republican lawmaker, it's in my stack here somewhere, but he got thrown off Twitter because he referred to her as a man. Where is that one? I'll just say it in passing.
What happened?
So...
Someone got in trouble for calling him a man?
Yeah, I found it. Okay, so Representative Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, he referred to our new four-star admiral, Rachel Levine, who identifies as transgender. He called her a man. So Twitter said, okay, you're done. Locked him out. Rachel Levine is a man. That's it. That's the whole story. But if you say that, they will crush you. Okay, let's get back to Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and their vision for the future. So they get into gender-based violence. They say gender-based violence is endemic in homeschools, workplaces, the military, communities, and online. It exacts tremendous costs on the safety, health, and economic security of survivors and their families. So they're going to work to eliminate gender-based violence wherever it occurs by developing and strengthening national and global laws and policies, investing in comprehensive services for survivors, and increasing prevention efforts.
I think we can all agree that violence is wrong.
Absolutely wrong.
And these people need they need help.
But we already have laws on the books for this. If somebody gets hurt, if somebody hurts somebody else, we have all kinds of laws that govern that and punish that. And yet the federal government is going to be working overtime to do these things that strike me as busy work, if you ask me. They're going to work to advance gender equality and equality in the law and ensure that rights are on paper are fully implemented in practice. They're working towards gender parity and diversity in leadership roles, including in peace processes, national security, et cetera, et cetera. They want to promote the leadership of women and girls. And here's where I trip over that. What do they mean by that? To promote the leadership of women and girls, do they mean actual women and girls or just women and girls in the modern sense of the word, which can mean anything nowadays? So it's a lengthy document, and it is a great example of not seeing the forest for the trees. As our enemies are planning to do bad things to us, this is what we're... Okay, I need to get to Dr. Fauci. All right. So there's a story that came up over the weekend. And I have some thoughts on this. I have thoughts about a lot of things, as you could probably tell. This is from the Daily Wire. Social media erupts in calls to hashtag arrest Fauci as Dr. Fauci is accused of lying. Now, we talked about that last week. You know, this the gain of function. Gain of function simply means that when, like at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China, they were funded in part by the National Health Institute here in the United States, even though Dr. Fauci said otherwise under testimony, he said that we didn't do that. Gain of function has to do with modifying viruses so that they're more easily transmissible from animals to human beings and then from other human beings to other human beings. And he said we didn't do that. Turns out the National Health Institute said, yeah, we did. But there's more. So in the wake of that revelation that came out last week, and keep in mind that Dr. Fauci is the chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden. He serves as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, one of 27 agencies that makes up the National Institute of Health. On Wednesday, the National Institute of Health admitted in a letter to U.S. lawmakers that taxpayers did indeed fund research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology that led to the creation of a more severe strain of the bat coronavirus. It also admitted that its grantee that funded the research, EcoHealth Alliance, violated the terms of its grant by failing to report the outcome of the research. Well, I think we know what the outcome of the research was. We're living with that now. Back in May, Dr. Fauci claimed that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. You do not know what you were talking about. Actually, I think he did know what he was talking about. He was just sort of
absolutely
like
not
lying.
That would be impossible.
You do not know what you're talking about. So,
no, you misconstrued that, Senator, and you've done that repetitively in the past.
You do not know what you're talking about.
They got hit very badly. They've made some mistakes.
You do not know what you're talking about.
If you believe 22% is herd immunity, I believe you're alone in that.
What if it's 23%?
Okay.
You're out. You have nothing left. All right. Okay, so here's the other part of it. The same Dr. Fauci was also involved with the funding of research that involved, and I want to get the exact language here so that you follow what's going on here. He was involved in research that involved puppies. And one of the things that the puppies were subjected to, and I think it was along the lines of maybe three dozen or so puppies, they were subjected to being put, their heads put into these, I guess you could call them cages, I suppose, but they were basically these sand flies from the beach were inside these cages, inside these boxes, and the puppies' heads were inside there. And they basically, they did these, it's hard for me to even talk about this because it's just such a terrible thought. But in any case, it has to do with the sand flies basically eating them to death, just the heads. The bodies were outside of the cages, and in some cases, the documentation from this lab shows that they were they had their vocal cords in some cases cut because the people in the facility did not like all of the sounds that the puppies were making while these sand flies were eating them to death. So because they didn't want to deal with the noise, they would cut their vocal cords. And that whole thing is another story. And this is why the Fire Fauci thing is taking on a life of its own. A bipartisan letter demands answers from the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and President Biden's chief medical advisor. This is Dr. Fauci. The White Coat Waste Project, the nonprofit organization that first pointed out that U.S. taxpayers are being used to fund the controversial Wuhan Institute of Virology, have now turned its sights on Anthony Fauci on other animal testing related matters, infecting dozens of beagle puppies with disease-causing parasites to test an experimental drug upon them. White House members wanted Fauci to explain himself in response to allegations that are brought on by the White Coat Waste Project that involved drugging puppies. According to the project, the Food and Drug Administration does not require drugs to be tested on dogs, so the group is asking why they are testing dogs. They claim that 44 beagle puppies were used in a Tunisia, North Africa laboratory. Some of the dogs had their vocal cords removed, allegedly, so scientists could work without the incessant barking. Well, why were they barking incessantly? Well, they were barking incessantly because their heads were locked in mesh cages filled with hungry sandflies so that the insects could eat them alive. They also locked beagles alone in cages in the desert overnight for 9 consecutive nights to use them as bait to attract infectious sandflies. And the upshot of this is that he was involved with this. That's their allegation, that he himself was involved with this project, or that it was not that he was there in the laboratory. They're not saying that, but they're saying that he was aware of some of these testing things. Now, here's my take on this, Cyrus. First of all, it's a terrible story. It bothers me to even have to talk about it. But isn't it interesting that all of the other stuff that people are attributing negatively to Dr. Fauci didn't really cause much of a ripple in some circles until animals were involved?
Yep.
And then when animals are involved, then they become righteously indignant. And I understand why, because it's a terrible story, but it seems like it's only when an animal gets involved that some people wake up and realize there's a problem here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I was just waiting for Dr. Fauci to tell me. I'm not know what I'm talking about.
This is no laughing matter.
No, it's not.
This is sick.
It is about as sick as it gets. Well, I mean, there are other things that are sicker.
Yeah,
but this is pretty sick.
Well, PETA's going to come after him now.
Now that animals are involved.
He messed with the wrong animal there.
Did you know that the New York City's largest police union is suing Mayor de Blasio over his vaccine mandate? It's just being reported this morning. The Police Benevolent Association, they filed a lawsuit yesterday in the Staten Island Supreme Court, arguing that the mayor's mandate that he issued last week is unlawful. The vaccine mandate is shocking to the conscience because it affects not only the right to bodily integrity, but police officers' right to pursue their employment, according to the 37-page lawsuit. They claim that the city is violating police officers' rights under the New York State Constitution because it has failed to show a compelling reason for the mandate, and that it was achieved by the least restrictive means. Lots of pushback building around the country, and there's the most recent example of that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Margie in Philadelphia. Hi, Margie.
Hi. I have this major issue with my daughter's school. It's a private Catholic school that she's been going to, and when she started there in ninth, she's a senior now. When she started there in ninth grade, I knew that there were things that they were not following completely with Catholic teachings. And
okay.
I noticed a difference. And then we had COVID, and now she's a senior. And now she has this religion teacher who is having them read this book and do this assignment. And the book is called Finding God Beyond Religion. And it's written by Tom Stella. And it says he was like, I was just reading about what she was doing. And it says, you know, he was a former priest. And there's a lot of quotes from Muslim and Buddhist and different.
Why don't you just tell the teacher that you object to this textbook, and you know you don't want your daughter to have to read that.
I'm my daughter's like, she's like such a shy person. She's like intimidated, and I don't want to make her like. Should I go to the teacher, or should I go to the head of the theology department?
Well, I mean, it's always good to start at the most local level. And so it sounds like the teacher would be the first person to go to. She may not have any choice in the matter, but maybe she does. And if she says, nope, sorry, this is what they're going to use. And if you find it objectionable, then I would take it up with whoever's the department head or the principal.
Okay.
You know? But what I would, if I were in your situation, I would put it in writing. I'd put it in writing. I'd say, here's a letter. You know, in your letter, I'd say, here's my objection to this book. Give some examples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think this should be used. I don't want my daughter to have to use this. Find something different for her, please. And then see what they say. And if you don't get any satisfaction, then bump it up. Maybe go to the principal.
Okay.
You know. Now, let's say that they won't play ball. So let's say that they dig in and say, no, this is what we're going to use.
It's about spirituality. It doesn't really show the Catholic practices. It's not Catholic. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar with the book. So if you found something objectionable in it, trust your instincts. But what I would say is, let's say that there's no way around this and you want your daughter to graduate from the school. Although that would call into question the, you know, whether or not that's the right school for her to be going to. But in any case, let's say that that's where she is going to graduate from. You could turn this into a teaching moment for your daughter, and you could have her and you could help her see what's wrong with this book. In other words, to go through it and to find the problems with it, and then let your daughter maybe even write a report about, here's why this book is so bad. And here are the reasons, and here are the problems. And that way she's sort of inoculated against the nonsense if the book is filled with nonsense. And I've never read it, so I don't know anything about it. But if it is, then you could turn this into something to her advantage, because then she's now going to not merely not have to read it, but she will read it with a critical eye and find the problems. And that's good for her. It'll help her in the future.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, that helps.
Okay, I'm glad.
That's perfect.
Hang in there, Margie. Hang in there. Hang in there. It'll be okay. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
It relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Catalytic converters on cars are a major theft magnet. Theft of catalytic converters has quadrupled in 1 year. Just astonishing how these things are just taken at random. They're a thief magnet, they call them, because they have rare metals like rhodium, palladium, and platinum, which trade for 4 and 5 figures per ounce. Catalytic converters on a car typically include 3 to 7 grams of these precious metals. Thieves will take the parts to smelters or scrapyards or sell them on the black market, and they can cost thousands of dollars to replace them. Toyota Priuses are particular targets because they have up to 3 catalytic converters, depending upon the model. Auto crimes detective Thomas Burke said it's a tough crime to solve because it's impossible to trace a catalytic converter once it's removed. So they have some suggestions that you can do to avoid falling victim. Number one, keep your car in a garage if you can. Number two, avoid leaving your car parked on street parking for extended periods, especially in dim areas without cameras. You can get a cat shield, a catalytic converter shield that goes over it, bolts down, so it's very difficult to get out of there. You can put your VIN number on the converter, and that's not going to do you much good after it's stolen, but it won't do the thief much good either, apparently. And you can also get theft coverage from your insurance if you should ever have your catalytic converter stolen. Have you ever had your catalytic converter stolen, Cyrus?
No, I don't think so.
Better get a cat cage so that you don't have to experience that pain.
Well, does it cost over $1,000? Because if it doesn't, then no one's going to do anything about it, right?
$950.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
In California, that's the law. You can steal up to that, but better not steal anything above that. $951, you're in big trouble. $950, no.
Does that include tax, though?
I don't think so. I think that's pre-tax, if I'm not mistaken.
The more you know.
Yeah. Let's go to Sandy in Campbell, Ohio. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. this is regarding the teaching of...
The teaching of...
We know it's not in the Bible. Purgatory.
Okay, you dropped out for a second. Could you start over?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Didn't hear. Okay.
This is regarding the teaching of purgatory.
Okay.
We both know.
She dropped out again. All I heard you say was, "We both know." Then it went blank.
Okay, I'm sorry. Put the phone against my ear.
Okay.
Okay. We both know that the teaching, the word purgatory, is not in the Bible, but yet it's taught. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand, because you know Jesus said that, you know, today is the day of salvation. You know, while you're alive, you choose whom you would serve. And so that's, like, to me, false teaching, because it gives people a hope that, you know, they can still get to heaven by, you know, like, purgatory is available. You know what I'm saying?
I do, but that's kind of a misunderstanding of the church's teaching. Do you mean, like, they get a second chance in purgatory?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't. See, the church doesn't teach that. Purgatory is only for people who are destined for heaven. And if you die in the state of grace, you're destined for heaven. And if you have some aspects of your life that need to be purified before you see God face to face, as it says in Revelation 21:27, nothing unclean will enter heaven. So if at the moment of your death, you're destined for heaven because you're dying in the state of grace, you love God, you're going to go to heaven. But if the sins of your life have left what we call temporal effects, or even if you have some, let's say, venial sins on your soul that you haven't confessed or you haven't specifically been sorry for, those things all have to be wiped away. So it happens between the time you die and the time you go to heaven, but it's not a second chance. It's not as though you get a second chance to say yes to God. It's only those who die in the state of saying yes to God who might go to purgatory.
But if you die in a state of grace, then wouldn't that mean that your sins are forgiven? And also, when you go to confession, aren't all the sins forgiven?
Yeah,
past,
absolutely.
Present and future?
Right, they are forgiven.
Then what would be the purpose of that teaching?
Well, because sin has two dimensions. One is the penalty, and that's what's forgiven by Jesus. That's what he died on the cross for. But there's also the effect of sin. So the effects of sin, not only in time, but also in the spiritual realm as well. One analogy to help you think about it would be, like, committing a sin is like hammering a nail into a piece of wood. Having the sin forgiven is Jesus pulling the nail out, but there's a hole there. And so penance, when the priest gives you a penance in confession, for example, penance is to repair that hole that's left over. It's part of restitution. So let's say that you stole $1,000 from your company. And you thought, you know, you had pangs of conscience, and you went to the boss the next day and you said, "I'm really sorry. I can't live with myself. I stole $1,000. Well, when you go to confession, the analogy here would be the boss says, "You know what? Thanks for being honest about it. I'm not going to call the police. I'm not going to press charges. The penalty that you would otherwise have, I'm just going to treat it as if it didn't happen." And you say, "Oh, great. Thank you. I wasn't expecting that." And as you turn to walk out of his office, he says, "But I want the $1,000 back." So injustice even though the penalty has been commuted, even though you don't suffer the penalty that you would have because you confessed to it, you still in justice have to return the $1,000. And so when you perform a penance that's given to you in confession, it's to help repair that damage, not pay the penalty. So at the end of life, if you die in a state of grace and you're ready, you know, you're destined for heaven, but you're not quite ready yet to see God face to face, those imperfections, those remnants of sin have to be cleaned up. And that's what purgatory does.
Okay, can I add something to that?
Sure, yeah, sure.
When you gave the example, which was a good example of the person that stole the money and, uh-huh. okay, he's forgiven, but then the boss wants the money back. But right. that's, you know, God said his ways are not our ways. That's man's ways. That's man's ways of justifying. So, I mean, God's ways are not our ways. It's like that's got me even more confused.
Oh, well, then how do you explain, let's take King David for a second. You know, go back to 2 Samuel. And you read the story of King David, who seduced another man's wife. He not only seduced her, he impregnated her. And then he sent the man, the husband, to the front lines of the war with the Philistines so that he would be killed, so that he could have that man's wife for himself. Well, after he repented, God forgave him, but God told him that as a penalty for his sin, the baby that was conceived through this illicit union with Bathsheba would die. So God punished him for his sin. He forgave him of his sin, but there was an effect due to the sin that God punished him for, and that was the loss of the child. Adam and Eve, I'm sure, were forgiven by God, and yet they still had to deal with the temporal effects due to their sin. You know, pain in childbirth for women, enmity with nature, the fallen nature that they had to deal with, sickness, and eventually death. Those were all aspects that they had to deal with after their sin. You know, even though they were forgiven, they still had to deal with that.
Right, but that was on earth. But also, when you brought up David and, you know, that mm-hmm. story, yeah, that's true. But now, see, this turns a lot of other people that I talk to that, you know, are questioning people that believe in the Catholic faith uh-huh. or even in Jesus. They look at that story, you know, of David and Bathsheba and God, you know, the consequences is the baby dies. The baby was mm-hmm. innocent. So then they don't even want to hear anything about God, because how could there be a God that would take the life of a baby for the sins of the father?
Well,
and the mother.
I can't explain why God does what he does, but we do know that he did that. That was a penalty that he imposed on King David.
I know, but do you understand that? Don't you question that? I mean,
no.
The poor baby was innocent.
Well, I understand that, but God is the author of life, of course, and it's up to God in any case, you know, when somebody dies. So this is an example of how sin constantly has collateral damage. But that's somewhat of a second topic. I want to focus on purgatory in the time that we've got, unless you, I mean...
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying that turns a lot of people away from believing in God, because they think what a cool God, because of the baby. You know, that's just one example, you know, of who would want to serve a God. I'm not saying I feel that way, but unbelievers or people that are questioning or searching, who would want to serve a God that would do that?
It's
like, you know, the baby is being... What would you tell a person that's questioning that then?
Well, I mean, here again, we're getting off the topic of purgatory, but I would say that this is a God being the author of life can decide who dies or when somebody dies. God has that prerogative. And certain things happen.
Well, actually,
go ahead.
Actually, we're not getting off the subject of purgatory, because you gave the example of, you know, the nail and the hole still being there when the nail is taken out. You know, and you brought it up about the consequences of sin.
Oh, I know I brought it up. All I'm saying is that that then gets into another topic, which I'm happy to talk about in the time that we've got left, is that God has the authority to determine who dies and how they die. And if it is part of God's plan that, yes, an innocent person died because of the sin of a guilty person, God has that prerogative. Well, I hope that's at least a little bit helpful, Sandy. Do call me back. We're short on time, but I'd love to talk to you again. We have to take a 21-hour break, which we'll take in just a moment. Thank you, Sandy. Before we do go, though, I want to remind everybody that we are praying for your loved ones, the friends and family members of yours who have died. We have a special novena coming up that begins on November the 2nd, and it will go until November the 11th, I think. I have to look at it, but you can find out the 10th. Thank you. You can find out more about this novena that will be prayed during our daily mass at noon central, as well as the Chaplet of Divine Mercy at 3 p.m. central on Drew Mariani's show, and also on our Family Rosary Across America each evening at 7 p.m. Central. And we would like to pray for your deceased loved ones. We were just talking about purgatory. And if your deceased loved ones are in purgatory, let us know their names and we'll pray for them by name. And we invite you to join us in praying this special novena. And you can find out more and you can also tell us their names by going to relevantradio.com/souls, S-O-U-L-S. You'll find out more there. Until tomorrow, I'll be back with you again live tomorrow, same Pat time, same Pat channel. Please pray for me. And I'll pray for you. God bless you.